I got the right microphone there. Of course I do.
Hello, Steve Dale.
Hello! This is so exciting for me for so many reasons, doing WGN Nightside. And one of those reasons, I get to see you and chit-chat with you. How
That's
are you?
That's right. I'm doing very well. Thanks, Steve.
Well, and we've got such an exciting show here.
Awesome.
So here's what happened.
Okay.
Growing up as a kid, you've known me for a long time, but you haven't known me that long. My favorite hockey player, Pierre Palat, Hall of Fame defenseman.
Number three.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. You're not old enough to know that.
My dad was a huge hockey fan. In fact, he and my mom went on their first date at a Blackhawks game.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How interesting is that? So if it wasn't for the Blackhawks, you would not be here today.
That is true. That's very true. I never really thought of it that way.
You need to tell the Blackhawks about that.
I did. I told many years ago when we first got the Blackhawks, 2009, I believe it was, 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And I told Jay Blunk and John McDonough, and they arranged for my parents to go up in in one of the suites, and they had dinner, and they got to watch the Blackhawks game, a little anniversary present, so it was very cool. Blackhawks are top-notch. They took care of them.
The Blackhawks are the classiest organization.
The best in sports.
I totally agree with that. And then, after we talked, well, I didn't even explain this. So, Pierre Palat is my favorite player. So, Tom, my superstar producer, explains or indicates he is a superstar, and here's why. He says, because I didn't know I was going to be on quite this early, so I wanted a guess that made sense following hockey. And he said, well, there's this guy I know. He made a film. His name is Carson Palat, and he's the grandson of Pierre Palat. I said,
no way.
Yeah! I said, yeah, exactly what I said. I said, this is amazing. I am so excited because this is as close as I'll come to meeting Pierre Palat, who passed away about a year ago.
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
Yeah. So I am so excited to talk about this documentary.
That's so cool.
And
I'm excited to listen to you talk about it.
And after that, we are going to get into shape. You're going to run around the radio station because we are talking about just that. You know, the marathon's coming up, and we're talking with Greg Hipp and Dale Edmer, communications manager of the Chicago Area Running Association. So you may not start with a marathon. You may start with running around the block, down the block, running after a bus. And in Chicago, you do run after buses, but something, and to get into shape. And what are the downsides of that? What are the upsides of that? And is it worth it? Is it too late if you're like Andrea's age and you're 24?
Thank you, Steve.
Anytime. Is it too late if you're 64, 74? I mean, and what if you weigh too much? You know, how do you navigate all that? And we will talk to these guys who are experts about that. And then I have the perfect guest to follow that. We will talk to the owners of Panino's Pizza. They do have the best Neapolitan pizza in Chicago. We'll learn what Neapolitan pizza is. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
Yeah, it's got to do with the oven, and they're actually licensed, I think might be the right term even, to prepare Neapolitan pizza. Apparently, not everyone is allowed to do that.
Now, wait, that's not the pizza with the tomatoes and the basil. That's different, right?
Well, I think it has tomato and basil, so I don't know what you mean. But it's made in a special oven, and they're different somehow than the typical wood ovens that we've seen.
Hmm.
But I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out, but I'll tell you, it is amazing pizza. And it was an accident that I said, can you bring in some pizza too? So if you stick around long enough, Andrea, you might get some pizza here. We're going to be talking with an actor by the name of Chuck Stransky. You may not know his name, but you know the plays he was once in. David Mamet plays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so all of these great actors were in Chicago. And I covered theater back in the day, actually. So I got to see all these plays at theaters that are long gone, but David Mamet, the amazing playwright, had a stable of regular actors, sort of a repertory group of sorts, and Chuck was in that group. And some of those actors moved on to Hollywood, but some are still right here in Chicago, and Chuck is one of them, and he's in a show at the Timeline Theater Company. So we'll talk about him, we'll talk about that show, we'll talk about David Mamet a little, who, I mean, no one could write like he did, and he wrote real life. So he's the first one on stage. I will tell you this. I think I could tell this story. We'll find out. So Roy Leonard, the great WGN broadcaster. I was so lucky because on occasion I got to be a guest on Roy's show. I learned so much just by watching him. And because I covered theater for a short time, I would see Mr. and Mrs. Leonard at the theater. And when David Mamet's plays first rolled out, the language was rather colorful. And it wasn't something that was common in theater at that time. And every time the four-letter word was blurted out by the actor on stage, it was like someone was shooting a gun at Mr. Roy Leonard. He'd go, whoa, whoa, you know, it would like it was hitting him almost. And he was surprised, but he always gave those shows good reviews. And we'll be talking to Chuck Stransky, the actor who was in many of those plays himself that helped to change theater, not only in Chicago, but all over the country. We'll also talk with Domati Pongo. You know who that is, Andrea?
Of course I know him.
Yes.
He's in our newsroom.
Of course, of course. He is an amazing guy.
He is.
And the more I learn, the more I'm amazed. He is involved with everything. I don't think there is a thing in Chicago he's not involved in, but all over the world, really. And he's leading another trip to Africa, to Ghana specifically. And we will talk about that. And we'll talk about how you might be able to join him on that trip. And we will talk to you soon in another newscast.
Very good. See you at 10:30.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea Darlis. It's 10:12 now on WGN Radio. And sitting right across from me is Carson Palat. So, Carson, have you done interviews before? Have you done a couple of these?
No, this is my first radio one.
This is your first radio one?
Yeah, first radio one. And yeah, it's such an honor to be here. I didn't imagine myself coming here today. And I'm very honored.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. And the story I told Andrea was true, that when I was told by Tom, the producer of this show, that I've got this idea. His name is Carson Palat. He has this movie out now. What is the name of the movie?
The movie is called The Heart of the Blackhawks, which was the same title as the book, his biography book that was published. And yeah, I just named it after that. I mean, the author is, and
you mean,
I mean, he's
you
one.
Mean, you mean this book?
Yeah, you have the book with
yes.
you. Oh,
when
my
I
God.
Say I am a fan. I mean, you're never going to do another interview like this.
Yeah, no, really? No, you're all decked out.
Yes.
Yeah, he's even wearing the my grandpa's t-shirt. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I walked in and I was like trying to phone the office and you come in and you're like, oh, you're trying to get in? Oh, you're Carson. Hey, check out
you're wearing a Blackhawk jersey. Number 3 was his number. Mm-hmm. And I'm wearing a t-shirt that has his name on the back of it with number 3. This picture?
Yeah.
I bought that on eBay because here's what you're going to think I'm crazy, man. So here's what I bought that came with it. And this was what I was really after. A hockey puck signed by Pierre Palat.
Oh, my God.
Is that real, buddy?
Yeah, that's his signature, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But that's how much. So growing up, there's a Chicago Blackhawk commercial that you probably, because you live in Canada, so, you know, you haven't seen, I don't believe, this commercial.
Yeah.
And this commercial shows a kid in bed late at night listening to something you probably have never heard of, Carson. How old are you?
22.
Yeah. You never heard of this. A transistor radio. And the kid is listening to a transistor radio. It's probably circa 1970-something. I don't know.
Okay.
Listening to the transistor radio, listening to a broadcaster named Lloyd Pettit, and listening to the hockey games. And then you hear mom in the background, because a little kid, saying, go to bed already! That was me. I would stay up late listening to the hockey games. You know, I didn't care that there was school the next morning. I had to listen to the hockey game. And I was a huge hockey fan, still am, but huge hockey fan. Could tell you all the Blackhawks in those eras, in that era, in their uniform numbers. So to me, you're the celebrity that's on. This is like the biggest celebrity that I've had on since the Tequila Professor. It's in the same category. Huge celebrity. So I was so excited to have you here. You're a young guy. You're a filmmaker. Why do this movie about your grandfather?
Yeah, well, I just felt like he was forgotten in Chicago, just a bit. I mean, I was walking down the street, you know, getting like, you know, heckled, like, oh yeah, like Pierre, like, and I don't know, like, yeah, from Canada, you think like he was very, he's forgotten, but coming to Chicago, a lot of people stopped me on the streets asking about, you know, why I'm wearing that jersey and that. So,
with his name on the back.
Yeah. And they, you know, they like a young guy wearing a jersey of an, you know, old hockey player from the 60s is kind of strange, right? So, you know, I passed out a few cards today, you know, explaining I'm his grandson. And
so, do people in Chicago, remember your grandfather, do you think?
They do. Like, even at, like, when I came into the airport, like, I was, you know, getting checked by the people. What are they called? They're the people that, like, check to make sure you're, like, you know, cool enough to get in.
The gate agents?
Yeah, the gate. Yeah, they're just, like, I showed them my ID, and they're like, why are you here? I'm here for a film festival.
Oh, you mean when you go through customs?
Yeah, customs. That's just,
you're in Canada, so yeah. You're going through the U.S.
Yeah. And, like, I just told them, like, what my, you know, they asked what my film was about. I told them, and they're like, what? You know, they're very shocked. And I really just wanted to make a film to, you know, keep his legacy on, because, I mean, that film will always, you know, forever last, just like his book and just like, you know, what he did in the, you know, Chicago. So,
well, so I'd argue that people will forever, for sure, remember Makita and Bobby Hull.
Yeah.
Bobby Hull happily is still here. Stan Makita recently passed away.
Yeah.
Great hockey players, but what your dad did didn't make headlines, or what your grandfather did, I'm sorry, didn't make headlines so much. And a goal scorer is always more impressive, but I would argue that your grandfather changed the way defensemen played hockey, Doug Harvey before him, but your grandfather changed the way defensemen play hockey from his point on. It's different now. And he had the ability, he wasn't... Bobby Orr was almost a forward.
Yeah.
Your grandfather wasn't. He was very much a defenseman, but boy, he could score goals, and he even racked up far more assists than that. And before him, no one really did that.
Yeah, and people also forget, like, my grandfather led the team in points when they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He had 15, and Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita had 14,
in
right?
In the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. And when they won against the Red Wings in 61. People forget about that, especially, you know, he had the record for winning, you know, 3 Norris trophies in a row. And
that's the trophy for being the best defenseman in hockey. Has anyone since won in 3 years?
Bobby Orr beat that. But, like, that was, like, when also the league expanded. My grandpa retired before. I mean, like, I was explaining before how, like, when the league expanded, there were not a lot of good teams. And, like, Bobby Orr was obviously, like, he was a great player, like, and even, like, met him once, he's a nice guy. It's just like, how, when the league expands, like, even with Gretzky was only, I'm not trying to diss anyone at all, I'm just saying is that, like, when the league expanded, teams were easy to score on, when, you know, when they added in St. Louis and Philadelphia.
They added 6 more, and yeah, Oakland, like, at the time.
You know, the most points my grandfather scored was, like, you know, 59 points in a season. That the league was tough, 6 teams. And then, you know, Bobby Orr gets, like, 120 points. And it's, you know, it's just, like, you know, the league, it was just different. It was new to hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, people took advantage of that. And it was, like... You know, obviously, those guys are great. They're, you know, way better than my grandfather. But what my grandfather did in Chicago was just, you know, it was just the original 6. And it was just old-time hockey. And yeah.
All right. I want to talk about the movie, Heart of the Blackhawks. It is the story of Pierre Palat. And we will do that in more detail when we come back. We're here with Carson Palat on WGN. You grew up listening to that song, perhaps. I don't know. Did you?
No, I did. Oh, I've heard it before. Yeah.
So what was he like? What was your grandfather, Pierre Palat, like? We're talking to Carson Palat, Pierre Palat's grandson, who made a movie about his grandfather. A documentary, is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, that's how you put it. Yeah, a short documentary.
So what was he like? Yeah.
He was a very humble guy, you know. He kind of, like, he really cared about other people's accolades. Like, you know, he really cared about how, like, you know, Bobby Hull, he helped Bobby Hull get, you know, 50 goals in a season. And he
What's
said,
the story behind that?
Well, the story behind that is, like, I guess just pass to Hull, he'll score.
Well, that was pretty, yeah. He said
yeah.
so in the book.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
said, I'm
yeah.
going to help this guy. Yeah. We want him to be, because 50 goals back then was a deal. It was a huge deal.
I don't think it was Maurice Richard. He did it first. Am I right? Am
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. So like, I didn't put it in my documentary, but my grandfather's one of his prized possessions was having Bobby Hull's first or 49th puck before he scored. You know, doing his slappers. I don't know. Yeah. He just cared about other people's accolades, and he just like. He really cared about other people. He was a very humble guy, and I miss him dearly. And,
why yeah. a documentary about him? So you have to tell us a little about you in order to answer that.
Yeah, well, I've been making films for, like, since I was in grade 7.
Really?
And I just love entertaining people, making people laugh, and just having a good time. And, like, a filmmaking gives me that medium to do that to people, right? And, you know... Some festivals at premiere at, I couldn't go because it's out of the way. Like, it won a Best Graduate Award at the Chicago International Film Festival.
Really? I didn't know. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And unfortunately, I couldn't go. But just, you know, the fact of me knowing people watch that is, it's just amazing. And all the talk about any film you make, it warms me knowing, you know, you might have help someone out, or just like, I don't know, just like, you know, entertainment gets people through their days, and that's why I love filmmaking, and that's what got me started. Yeah.
Do you eventually want to do comedies more than documentaries?
Ooh, that's a great question. I actually did think I'd like to do comedies, but I'm more of like, I want to do like some serious, like, you know, narratives, I guess. Like, I really love thrillers. Like, I'm just trying to write some screenplays right now and just, you know, practice, you know? Like, you know, you write your first screenplay, it's not going to be good. Never going to be good. So it's all about...
What's it about? Is it about hockey?
Ooh, no. No, actually, but I've thought about it. I've thought about making a biography about my grandfather, like the Maurice Richard movie, right? Or just like, you know, Slapshot. You know, that'd be great to do, like, another, you know, hockey comedy, right? Or... I don't know, or Wayne's World. Like, I mean, it doesn't involve hockey, but it involves Chicago. It involves Stan Mikita's cafe, right? So, you know, yeah. I'd love to just, you know, I'd like to be a jack of all trades, like Billy Wilder. You know, he could make those comedies. He could make those, you know, dramas. Billy Wilder was an old director in like the 40s.
It's interesting. Yeah, yeah. You should mention him.
Yeah.
Because we don't have those kinds of movies anymore. They were like crackpot comedies, I think was the term that was used at the time.
Yeah, and he created the film noir genre, right? Or genre theme, whatever people argue about it. Double Indemnity made that just... killed, and then ended it with Sunset Boulevard. He's a brilliant director. I look up to that. Like, and that's what my grandfather taught me. Like, when you asked about what, like, he's like, he taught me to copy other players, like how he'd copy Doug Harvey on his game. So, you know, I look at, you know, you look at other directors like Stanley Kubrick, Christopher Nolan, or like, you look at like the documentaries, you know, like I look at like 30 and 30, the ESPN documentaries, and you look at like some narrative, and I combined it into my own film. Like, it has narrative qualities, if that makes sense. Like, if it, you know, it sticks to the three-act structure. It, you know, it starts off with his, you know, before hockey, in hockey, after hockey, and when, you know, he didn't start playing hockey until he was 17.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So it seems as though he became an NHL player, let alone a Hall of Famer at the end of all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of sheer grit, in a way.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, I think he just, like, you know, he found a passion and just did it, you know? Like, and that's just, like, you know, he could be good at anything he wanted to be, you know? Like, he really wanted to get good at golf. He got good at golf after his career, right? And, like, you know, he started a farm in Milton, Ontario, and after he was traded to the Leafs, you know, he only played one season with the Leafs, but he was kind of a bit, you know, fed up with hockey, because he was a bit hurt when he was traded from Chicago to Toronto. I forget the player who he traded him for.
Jim Pappin.
Jim Pappin. Okay. Wow. And, like, you know, trading him for another good player is, you know, it's hockey's a business, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to happen, but
it happens all the time now, but back in the day, it didn't happen. We'll be back. There's much more to talk about.
Yeah.
But first, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That is coming up with Madam. How's that? Madam Andrea Darlis.
Oh, God, now I have a title.
Yes,
wow.
You do. But yeah, even people with titles have to wait, and you have to wait. This is WGN Nightside. I am Steve Dale, and I'm so excited to be here in general. I just, you know, I love being on the radio. I love playing radio. So I thank the folks who said, hey, Steve, come on in. And what's more, look at the producer I get. They give me Tom, one of the best there is. So thank you very much, Tom. And thank all of you for joining us. My guest, oh my gosh, this is so exciting for me. If you're just joining us, you know, I grew up like so many of you did, I'm sure, watching and listening to the Chicago Blackhawks, and Carson Palat, the grandson of Chicago Blackhawk great legend, I think it's fair to say, Pierre Palat is here in the studio because he made a movie, a documentary. We'll tell you how you can all watch that documentary in a moment. Now, you live in Toronto, right, Carson?
Yes.
So, living in Toronto, you probably don't know legendary Chicago, not legendary Chicago. Well, he is a Chicago fan, actually, which I'll get to in a second. He's a legendary National Hockey League broadcaster with NBC. He's been doing it for a while, Doc Emmerich. Doc Emmerich is amazing in so many different ways. I've gotten to know this guy as a person, and I do the pet show here at the radio station for 22 years, and Doc listens to the show early, and I mean early, on Sunday mornings. And sends me text along the way, and more than once. Now, this is cool, Carson, because I know we were talking before the show, you have a Newfoundland dog. So he's done this before. He says, here's a check. Find the animal shelter that can use it. And what we do is we generally name dogs after Chicago Blackhawks or hockey players. Maybe we ought to name one after Palat. That wouldn't be a bad idea, right?
Yeah, no.
And we named one of the dogs Doc, and Doc just got adopted out from Chicago Canine Rescue. But the neat thing is, and I don't have the note in front of me, is the note that was written with it. This dog is so wonderful that my life has changed. So Doc Emmerich has not only changed a dog's life, saved a dog's life, but also changed a person's life. And that's not unusual when people adopt dogs. You know, they say, I say, you save the dog, and they say, no, the dog saved me. Or cat, on occasion. We get that a lot. And Doc Emmerich, once again, and I have to say it publicly, and you're not looking for the public acclaim, I know that, but you merit that public acclaim, so thank you very much for it. It is 10:38 on WGN. Boy, oh boy, you made this movie, right? And
yeah.
In this movie are family members, and clips of Pierre Palat as well?
Yes. I did sit-down interviews with my whole family on my dad's side. You know, interviewing my grandfather, interviewing my two aunts, my dad, and my uncle. And, you know, I felt like I had to do that family dynamic to... It just complements the other, like when the story's going... It just gives it more truth if more people are talking. If
mm-hmm.
if I just have my grandfather, like, yeah, it'd be cool. But it's just, like, sometimes he didn't tell a story I wanted to, in a way. So you edit, like, the family members in, and they tell the story better. And that's how I wanted to do it, and I really executed it well, yeah.
If you must say so yourself. Heart of the Blackhawks is the name of the movie, the Pierre Palat story. Is there something about that story that you didn't know that surprised you?
That's a great question. I just, I guess what surprised me was he... I'm racking my brain right now. I guess how, like, he won the Norris Trophy three times in a row and was, you know, he was like a first-time All-Star three times in a row, mm-hmm. also, and you know, like I guess looking back at the stats, like when he said he was the leading scorer in like the 1961 Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, having 3 goals and 12 assists for a defenseman leading the team in points is just amazing. So I think just like what he did and how, just everything. I mean, I knew a lot about my grandfather, obviously, like reading the book and, you know, doing my research is just, I just knew the subject in and out. I didn't really,
Well, you said he would have been good at anything. Was he a perfectionist?
He was, yes.
So like, are you the same way?
Yeah, like I felt like, I mean, I probably completed the documentary 50 times. You know, you render it, you go, oh, I gotta add this picture in. Oh, I gotta color correct this or something.
What does rendering it mean? That sounds like something you do with a cow.
You complete the video and you compress it into a final movie format, and it takes like, it can take hours. And you know, and then you watch it again and you're like, oh, I should have done this better.
Uh-huh. So you re-edited it again.
Hundreds of times. And you know, I got the version I wanted. And
is it bittersweet to watch it now? Did you know that was he ill at the time that you did this, or
he was, and I didn't know. You know, because he was waiting for the test to come back from the doctors, and
so he didn't know either.
He didn't know. He just thought, you know, you're old, some pain. You know, he just thought that. And
well, what was that pain?
It was he used to have prostate cancer, and mm-hmm. that went away a while ago, but then it came back. But then his shoulder then just spread into his mm-hmm. lungs, and then is terrible. And
yeah,
no, he didn't know, but he's a real champ, right? He's tough. So he
have
stuck
you ever
that
met
interview and,
a hockey player that wasn't tough?
No, yeah. I maybe in like my old hockey league I've played, but not
so
NHL players I've met, no, they're all tough. They're all
tough.
Did
you grow up playing hockey?
Yes, I did. I've only really played house league. I didn't really like, my family, we have 4 kids. We all wanted to play hockey and do other activities and focus on school.
Was there pressure so I've talked to people in different businesses that are hugely successful, as your grandfather was. And at times they say, no, stay away from what I did. It'll be too much pressure. Yeah. Other times, other individuals say, yes, I'd love for you to do what I did. So what was your grandfather's...
I really wish I did play hockey, you know, to a higher level. And I felt like that was an opportunity missed out because I'm tall enough. I can gain the weight. I'm pretty skinny now only because, like, I don't work out anymore because I'm so busy filming and stuff. But
Do you run?
No.
We're going to be talking about maybe you should start.
I should start.
Yeah, we're going to have some folks in from the Chicago Area Runners Association in just a little bit. In fact, I think they may be here right now waiting in the PPG Paints green room. That's wrong. They would not be sitting and waiting in the green room. They would be running around in circles around the green room, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to learn about, okay, how do you start from square ones? If you're a young guy like you, or maybe not such a young guy or a woman, you know, what's the expectation? Now there's apps that tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
And they kind of, you have a personal coach. So we'll talk about all that and how good those apps are and how much you can depend and or maybe you shouldn't depend on them. And maybe you shouldn't even think about a marathon because the Chicago Marathon is coming up, the big race here in this city. Toronto, I suspect, has one as well.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they do.
Yeah. So you go to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto.
Uh-huh.
Do you take your friends and say, that was my grandfather there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Usually I try to get like a date or something and
oh really?
Just kidding. I'm
is
kidding.
That, no, that's yeah, that oh, one's, oh, if, hey, if that
oh,
yeah, works.
By the way, that's my grandfather.
That would impress the girls, I think.
Before, I used to be able to point at the Stanley Cup and show his name, but unfortunately they've had to take off the Blackhawk 61.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So well, they're, how do they actually erase the names of the they to
still
make room?
They still keep them, and they keep them in, like, so in Toronto, it's an old bank, the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it literally is in, and I've been there a couple times. Yeah. It's literally inside, and there's a vault in the bank.
Yeah.
And in the bank, the old bank vault, is one of the Stanley Cups, as I recall, including the very original cup, which is about, like, a foot high.
Yeah, so they have the original cup. I think there's, like, three versions of the cup.
Yeah.
But, there's already like two strips off of the cup. There's been so many teams that won it that, and yeah, it comes, I think players only last 50, 60 years on, I think 50 to be exact.
Well, that's a good run.
Yeah, it is. And, but like, you know, times change. You know,
so, they, yeah, they do. what are you most proud about regarding the movie?
I guess, I felt like I really showed my grandfather's character on who he was, right? I mean, I have this blooper at the end of the credits of him. He's talking about how he won his Norris Trophy. So I'll repeat it just for people who haven't, I mean, seen it yet.
We don't need the delay, do we? It's clean?
Oh, it's clean. Okay. It's clean. So, like, you know, the first time he won, they gave him a plaque for free. Like, I'm not saying a quote, but I'm just explaining. So they gave him a plaque for free. And then the next year he won, he goes, I don't want a plaque. I want a trophy. They go, all right, that'll be $50. He's like, oh, man, all right.
He had to pay to get the trophy?
Yeah, because he gets a miniature trophy to take home, right?
What?
And then the next year he goes, well, I won again. So I had to give up another $50. And it's just like how he said it, because that's just who he was. And
Well, we can see, all of us can see how he said it.
Yeah.
How can we do that? How can we watch the movie we're talking about?
So,
Heart of the Blackhawks. It's the Pierre Palat story. Mm-hmm. And you can go where to see it?
So, I would just like to thank, I mean, for being here, the Middle Coast Film Festival for premiering it today.
And that was where?
That is at the Davis Theater.
Is that in Evanston?
I don't know. Sure.
Tom would know. Lincoln Square.
Yes. And I'm very glad for them having me here. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. But next month, it'll be released on YouTube and Vimeo.
So you can go to Vimeo, go to YouTube next month. Mm-hmm. Next month isn't far away.
Yes.
And just literally type in Heart of the Blackhawks or type in Pierre Palat's name, I suspect, and you'll find it easily enough.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's like everything else, or most everything else, on YouTube or Vimeo. You could just watch it for free.
Yeah.
How long is the movie?
Is 11 minutes and 42 seconds.
Was that a challenge to keep it, you know, that short?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of like you know, deleted scenes that just didn't need to
deleted
be told.
Deleted scenes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And it just like you know, that was like, I think the, for it to get into the most festivals, the requirements of it, it has to be under 15 minutes. And I think like, just like, that's just what it like fit, you know. I like to make it a feature would have been like, I would have needed more money, right? And I just, you know, I was fortunate enough for the school, like in college, like they gave me the grant money to rent the camera gear, and my grandpa, I mean, for the archive footage, thank God he gave me the money to, you know, buy the archive footage. And yeah, no, I was very fortunate in the position I made. If I made another documentary about some random subject and I needed to do this, that, and that, I just don't, you know, going into a subject blind, I mean, obviously you do research when you do a documentary, but like going into it, like if I didn't do my project, it just, I don't know. I'm very glad I made it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'll always have it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, so the family will always have it.
Uh-huh.
But now the world will always have it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And see what kind of person your grandfather was. And the hope is he isn't forgotten, you know?
Yes.
One of the greatest hockey players, as we talked about very early in the interview, he changed how defensemen forever, how defensemen play the game. And that was Doug Harvey to some degree, but it was really your grandfather. It was Pierre Palat. And very much a defenseman, but also, boy, could he score.
Yeah.
And set up others to score, which was the real talent, setting up those others, including Bobby Hull. Bobby Hull loved playing with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's how he got his 50 goals in part.
Yeah.
Wasn't only your grandfather, it was others. But, boy, he played a big role in all that.
Yeah.
So, again, go to Vimeo, go to YouTube. Heart of the Blackhawks. You can't do it yet. You have to wait a couple of weeks. But beginning next month, you will be able to do it. Thank you very much, Carson, for coming in, and what a pleasure it is to meet you. I was so excited, as I keep saying, but it's true. You are now number one, just passing by the Tequila Professor.
Man, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been an honor. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right. It is now eight minutes before 11 o'clock on WGN. My name is Steve Dale, WGN Nightside. It was really so much fun to meet that guy, you know, and he's a young filmmaker, and it was that in of itself, but Pierre Palat's grandson, who would have expected my favorite hockey player's grandson? That's just amazing. After 11 o'clock, I thought, you know what, the marathon is coming up. It is just around the corner here, and I don't know, I can't imagine ever run a marathon, but I do run a bit. I'm not very good at it. But I run 5Ks on occasion, and I go running 2, 3, 4 days a week, depending on my schedule and weather and my travel schedule. But I do it consistently, and, you know, I feel better for it. I really, really do. That runner's high that everyone talks about, what is that about? And we'll talk to two members of the Chicago Area Running Association about how to get involved, what the Chicago Area Running Association is. And you know what? Everyone can have a coach now. If you have a phone, because of the apps that are available, and they really work well. We'll talk about that as well. And then later, we eat pizza. Panino's Pizza, voted the best among several different sources, including Steve Dolinsky. What they do is, one of the things they do is called Neapolitan Pizza. And I don't know what Dolinsky says, but I say it's the best outside Italy. We're going to find out what Neapolitan Pizza is all about. I think you actually, as I said earlier, need to be licensed to do that. And then later in the show, we'll talk with WGN's own Domati Pongo. You hear him broadcast every once in a while. I think he does WGN Nightside. I don't think he talks about himself very much. So I thought, you know, he is fascinating. And what he does with these trips, taking people to Africa, is quite incredible. And I respect that a great deal. So we're going to learn more about that because he has an upcoming trip to Ghana. Africa. Why is he taking people to Africa? We'll find out. What do you think the city that is considered the city that you can have more fun in any other city in America? The funnest. See, I didn't want to say that because I don't think that's a word. Is it funnest?
Funnest?
No. No.
The most fun.
Thank
right?
you. Yeah. So I'm just a broadcaster. What do I know? So it's the, but I'm going to say it again. The funnest city. The one that you could have the most, what city do you think that would be?
Other than Chicago?
Well, Chicago's on the list.
It's on
so
there.
So Chicago's number six. So you'll have fun in Chicago.
Yeah, New York has got to be up there.
New York is number three.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm.
It's only number three.
It may be fun, but it's also expensive.
That's true.
Yeah, so I believe they're going to charge for the air now in Manhattan.
Oh.
If you breathe in Manhattan, you get charged for it. Not, you know, you might think Los Angeles would be, but they're number 13 on the list.
Can I take a stab?
Yes.
Podunk, North Dakota.
Let me look here. Podunk, North Dakota. It's here. It is.
City 2,984 of the most fun.
Well, that's exactly where it is on the list, but it's on the list. 2,984.
Oh my gosh.
You're right about that. But I'm looking for more of what number one might
most
be.
Fun place.
Yeah.
What's the criteria? What's their definition of fun?
Well, that's a fair question.
Okay.
So they look at restaurants.
Okay.
They look at playgrounds.
Okay. So family oriented.
Yes. They look at bars, not so family oriented.
Right.
Dance clubs. Mm-hmm. And nightlife, ranging from
the
theater
nightlife.
To concerts and all those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And clearly you love to boogie. So.
I love to boogie.
Yes,
oh,
yes, I know where
I
you're
do.
Going with that song.
Is Dubai on there? I don't know, or is there...
No, America. This is America.
America.
Oh, it's America.
Dubai is not in America.
Not yet.
Well, really? What do you know?
Oh,
all right,
done.
So I'll give you a hint, sort of.
Okay.
St. Louis, surprisingly, is on this. They're number...
They in the top 10?
19.
Oh,
woof.
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 Well, if you go to the Bowling Hall of Fame, probably.
That's true.
You know.
I think I've got a good guess. I'm going to say New Orleans.
New Orleans, it is fun. I'm surprised it's as low as it is. It's number 9, so it's in the top 10.
Denver.
Denver's here. It's number 11.
Oh, no, I'm way off then.
Honolulu is number 12. Washington, D.C. is 15. Austin, Texas, probably because of those margaritas you like so much.
Yes.
That's number 14.
Should be higher with those margaritas.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Carbondale.
Well, if you're going to school,
my alma mater.
Well, you know what? They don't. Isn't that often considered the number one party?
You know what?
City?
Back in the late '60s and early '70s, it was voted by Playboy magazine as the number one party school in America.
There you go.
And of course, that's when I went there.
Okay. So we in part because of the commercial break I have to do here.
Yes.
We need to know who number one is. I'll give you guys one more. Each of you,
all right.
One more guess.
Tom, you go ahead.
Seattle.
Seattle is number 16.
Portland.
Orlando is number 2. Oregon.
Portland, Oregon
is number 7. So that's...
Ooh, I'm getting
up there.
I wouldn't have thought
about it. Yeah. The city that is the most funnest... That
after
is the way
break.
I'm going to say.
After
oh,
this break.
Thank you. That's a very good idea. I like that. For the stories that matter... We go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in a moment, but first, Roger Badish, you are a newsman. You know these things, so take one more guess at the city that you can have. We'll tell you this. This
okay.
is the city that you could have the most fun. Mm-hmm. The city that is the least fun,
Ooh.
According to this, there is such a city.
Okay, I can imagine.
It's Peoria, Arizona. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but that is, now that you mention that, I'm going to beat Tom to the punch, and I'll say that Peoria, Illinois is the most fun city.
No.
Okay, Tom, it's all yours.
Oh, no. Yeah. So the city that is considered the city you can have the most fun in...
Punxsutawney?
It's not a good guess at all. Would be Las Vegas.
Oh,
that's my
so
second
obvious.
Hometown.
Of course. What was that, Tom?
I can't believe I didn't even think of Las
yeah.
Vegas.
You know
it's
what
so
threw
obvious.
Me? Was the playgrounds.
Oh, well, Las Vegas
That's
may not have
me.
It's an adult playground, Roger.
But really, when you go out, I've been, you know, we have friends that live in Las Vegas, so I go to the conference I go to every year, a veterinary conference, but if you go into the communities, it's like any other city, you know, and they have playgrounds. They
yeah, really I know. Have. I used to live there.
Oh, that's right.
I lived there for 3.5 years before it became a big city.
That's
before it
right.
became big,
yeah.
big.
Yeah, I knew that, and
I told. That's why when you said playgrounds, because I know there are families there.
Yeah,
but it's still a fairly transient community
well,
because
as,
of
yeah.
the casino workers.
Yeah, but not as much.
Not nowadays. Yeah. Not as much. I'm talking mid-70s. You know,
mid what?
So before you were born. Continue on.
Thank you very much. At 11:02 now, you can hear the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from Rokan with Anna DeVlantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Radio Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. That's the way I run pretty much on empty, I think. This is Steve Dale. That's who I am on WGN Nightside. I am thrilled to be here. And I thought with the Chicago Marathon just around the corner, it would be a good idea to talk to some folks from the Chicago Area Running Association. In the studio, Greg Hipp and Dale Erdmeyer. Welcome to WGN. What I really want to know is how you got here. Did you run?
Well, yeah, we ran the 10 miles over here, of course.
We raced, actually.
Of course. Are you runners yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been running since I was a kid, so I'm probably 27, 28 years into running now.
And Dale?
A little bit of a later start, but I started in college, and I've been running about 7 years.
And I started way late, which hopefully we'll talk about a bit. Most importantly, what is the Chicago Area Running Association?
Yeah, so we are the third largest running club in the country and the largest here in the Chicago area. We're a nonprofit. You know, our mission is to advocate for the local running community and also to provide opportunities for runners to train, race, learn, be social, and volunteer. So we host a lot of programs and events all throughout all of Chicagoland for runners.
Running is a great way, and this isn't something I didn't necessarily mean to talk about, but it is a great way to meet people.
It is. You know, I think all the benefits there are to running at CARA, we really say that the best one
CARA
is community.
CARA is the Chicago Area Running Association, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So within the running community, we're better known as CARA.
Mm-hmm.
But we really do believe that the greatest benefit to to being a runner is the community. And when you get involved in a local running club like Kara or one of the other great running clubs in the area, you know, that's one of the things that you're going to experience.
Okay, Dale, I know you're not a medical doctor, but no, she says, and you're not going to play one on the radio. I know that as well. But clearly, it's common knowledge. Running is good for you. But some people hesitate because they're concerned it may not be. When I told my doctor I've begun to run, I believe he had a party. He celebrated. He was so excited about it because it really is very good for you. But not only physically, that runner's high, and I want you to try to explain this because I can't, that everyone talks about, it's real.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you have, you're cleared from a doctor to start running and you get out there, it's really about your consistency. And you start to see improvement really quickly if you stick with it. And you just get this feeling when you set a goal to even run a mile or half a mile and you hit it and you feel good. You just get this, like, kind of a euphoria feeling, and it makes you want to try the next day to run a little bit farther, and it keeps pushing you. And I think that's why a lot of people end up training for a marathon, because it's such a big challenge, but you work your way to it, which is really cool.
So I just did what they call, I guess, a trail run, and I was awful. Yeah, it was really. And I've been doing 5Ks where I can finish them without, unless I stop to take pictures or something along the way, but I don't need to stop, and I can run in my neighborhood that far, mm-hmm. right? But a trail run
Trails are really difficult.
Yeah.
They can be technical. And
so I was really mad that I did so poorly. But you know that thing? But I have a good excuse. You know that thing that sometimes the belt that you wear that you put the mm-hmm. phone in? So runners will sometimes wear, it looks like a fanny pack almost, yeah. right? And you put your telephone in there. And for some reason, maybe because I was pounding harder because it was a trail, or maybe just because, it loosened. And it went down to my knees.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I went head over heels. And the good news is I did not take out the five people in back of me. You know, good. That's what I was really worried about. I mean, really, it could have been a chain reaction, terrible disaster. But I landed on my head. And then to start again and begin running once you stop is a hard thing to do. But I was having to your point, I was saying, oh, God, I'm never going to do anything like this again. That was until the next day. So now I want to try it again and do better.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, you kind of get that feeling like, okay, this wasn't my day. And, you know, everyone has an off day. You're not going to feel amazing on every single run you do. But if you love it and you know that that good feeling is there, you'll get back out there the next day and try again.
So, Greg, how does one start at square one? How do you motivate people? So you're at a party. We're at a party now, right? And we have the folks listening are part of the party, and we're just talking, right? And someone says, you know, I wish I could. I kind of would like to. How do you get them over the hump?
Yeah, I think it's all about people coming in with patience and realistic expectations. And, you know, getting started with running is you almost have to walk first. And it's, you know, when anybody gets into a beginning running program and the beginning running programs that we host, we do a walk-run method when we get people started, and it's just about getting people used to that time on their feet. And so we want people to be patient, and we don't want people to realize that whatever pace you're at, whatever distance you're at, you know, you are a runner now. You know, if you've decided to step into it, you know, you're a runner, and embrace that and enjoy it, and just give yourself time to improve.
And Chicago's a beautiful place to run. So if you live, I mean, we have listeners all over at this time of night, all over the country. But if you happen to be in Chicago or many of the suburbs also, just beautiful places to run. I think we're privileged here, actually.
Absolutely. The Lakefront Trail is incredible. Miles and miles of space. And we definitely take advantage of it with our summer marathon training programs. And it's great to see all of our groups out there and the camaraderie between like all the different running groups and everyone out there kind of working toward that same goal and having that space to share is just pretty amazing.
So you don't have to do the marathon. So let's say you're just starting off. You may not do the marathon if you're just starting off. I want to talk about how you get up to the point where you're doing 26 miles. But if you're just starting off, then you have a program for people to take it literally step by step?
Yeah, Steve, one of the things that we have, in addition to some beginning running programs, is we have a program in partnership with the Chicago Park District called Go Run, and we host 66 free...
What?
Free.
Wow.
5K and 1 mile timed races around
really?
Chicagoland.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a neat program. We started it in spring of 16, and we've done around 150 of them since we started the program. It's modeled after a program called Park Run in the UK, and it's they're unintimidating, they're welcoming. There's no barriers. They're in neighborhood parks, so folks who don't have access to great transportation can just walk or jog over to their park. And they're there. We're at Humboldt Park, Warren Park, Washington Park. We've done them all the way down as far south as 103rd Street and as far north as Western and Peterson.
I had no idea. And you actually get coaching, if you will, to help you complete these if you're new at it?
Yeah, so we have beginning running programs that happen at different times of the year, and we provide four different options, from folks who are coming straight off the couch to folks who have done maybe a little bit of jogging but need to get some structure for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those programs start with a walk-run approach, like I said, and then we use the go-run program as really kind of a tool to give people some low-key, unintimidating events to get started in before they move on into something more mainstream, like a Shamrock Shuffle 8K or something like that.
Yeah, and the 5Ks, the good news is the money generally goes to charity, but it costs something, so this is free. And that is indeed my favorite four-letter word. So we're going to find out when we come back how you can learn more about it. I want to tell you, on November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics by following the most comprehensive local political news online at chicagotribune.com/midterms. Okay, that's making me tired. There's no disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. I love those lyrics, but hopefully that doesn't happen very often. We're talking about running with the Chicago Area Running Association. Dale Erdmeyer is here. Greg Hipp is here. And we said there are some free programs. Do not move. Do not go away, because we will tell you how to learn more about those free programs, learn how to participate in all that. I like the runs where they offer pizza at the end of the run. And we're going to get this is like running, right? It's the same thing. No?
Yeah, absolutely. We may not be on just kale chips and
you eat pizza too, right?
We eat pizza and we drink beer, and for some of us that's the reason we run.
Exactly. I think that's the reward at the end of the run. And we're talking about the Chicago Marathon. So now this year the course has changed. So you could check out online exactly what the course is. More of the course is on the north side of Chicago than previously. And they're actually going right by our house. So they had this guy come, and my wife was walking our dogs when she saw the guy who put the sign up, by the way, the marathon is coming by your house. And by the way, you cannot park on the street, and whatever else that sign says that they put on all the homes and apartments and condos everywhere along the route. And she said, well, why are you coming up? We're glad you're here, but I'm curious why the route changed. And the guy really didn't answer the question, but he did say there are a lot of people here in this neighborhood. We live in Wrigleyville, who love runners, and runners love it when people come out and say, go, go, and they have those loud things and they cheer. Do runners love that? Do you pay attention to that, guys?
They do. The spectators make the race. I mean, I feel like it's such a nice distraction, too, if you're having a tough mile, to look out to the side and see people cheering you on. And especially if you have, like, your name on your shirt or your bib and people call out your name, it makes such a difference to have that encouragement.
So how do you get to the point where you're a good runner?
Well, I think being a good runner is all relative, and there's fast runners, and then some of the most serious runners I know, they're not fast, but they've run 50 plus marathons, and they look like completely normal people, but they're doing something kind of very incredible in their own lives. So I think the definition of what a good runner is, I think, is still open for interpretation. You don't have to be Galen Rupp, who won last year's Chicago Marathon, to be a good runner. Now, he's a fast runner, but there's a lot of folks out there that are putting in the miles that may not be quote unquote fast, but they're doing some incredible things already.
So if you're doing it, you're good?
Yeah, I think anybody that's out there putting in the miles should deserve some respect. And I think one of the neat things about being at a CARA program is just looking around at a starting line or a training program site and seeing what looks like very typical people, and then you start to see what they can do, and they put in a 20-mile long run on a Saturday, and you're like, wow, you're 5'4", and not exactly pulling off that spandex very well, but you just ran 20 miles.
Why are you looking at me when you say that? I don't understand that.
We need to relate, you know.
All right, so we promised the website, and that includes information about the free programs you have. What is the website?
Yes, if you go to gorunchicago.org, you can find information about the Go Run program, and those runs happen Saturdays at 9 o'clock, 24 weeks out of the year, three times on each Saturday at different locations simultaneously.
That's incredible. I really didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a great program. It's has a lot of volunteers that help lead it, and we've gotten great support from the Chicago Park District and the mayor's office to put on that program.
Yeah, it's a great program. More programs than we have time, I know, to talk about. So check out again that website, which is
GoRunChicago.org.
GoRunChicago.org. I have to say it like a runner would say it. Is that how a runner would say it? You guys hungry?
We are always hungry.
Yes, we've got some of the best pizza in Chicago. We're going to learn how that pizza is made and, in fact, why it is some of the best pizza in Chicago. I know they are waiting in the PPG Paints green room, but I can smell it all the way from over there. I can smell it. Do you smell pizza?
I want to smell pizza.
I do. It's not my imagination. I'm telling you, I am smelling pizza. From the Chicago Area Running Association, Greg Hipp and Dale Erdmeyer, thank you again for joining us.
Of course. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And I'll see you whiz by because I'll be watching all the runners from my house. You guys are running in the marathon?
I am, yes.
Ah, okay. He's a wuss. He should
I'll
be running.
I'll be stuck working that morning.
Yeah, that's wrong. You know what really matters, Roger?
What? Other than you and your guest and pizza.
Pizza! So come into the studio here. But not only do we have pizza, we have some of the best pizza in Chicago. I said earlier on the air that this is the best Neapolitan pizza outside Italy, but these guys have to explain what Neapolitan pizza is in the first place. So from Panino's Pizza, we have Bruno Brunetti, Shane Poirier, as well as Gino and Lenny Rago. Welcome to WGN, guys.
Thanks for having us,
Steve.
Whoa! They do it all at once. Yeah, it is. It's quadruple stereo. Nice. So I'll start with Bruno. Explain, Bruno, what Panino's is. Because it is a little different than what we typically are accustomed to when it comes to pizza.
Panino's is a family-owned restaurant. We have three different locations. We have one in the city at 3702 North Broadway, at Broadway and Waveland. We have one in Park Ridge at 28 South Fairview. And we have one in Evanston at 1968 Dempster Street.
So, Gino, I mentioned this kind of pizza called Neapolitan pizza. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, it's starting to get popular. We started about 10 years ago. And something we used to play around with, even though we had the Chicago-style pizza, the deep dish, the style.
Yeah, sure.
Just started playing around, built an oven in our garage.
Built a what in your what?
An oven.
In the garage?
A brick oven in the garage, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a special kind of oven you need, I think, for this kind of pizza that we're talking about, Neapolitan pizza, correct?
Correct.
What kind of oven do you need?
You just need a brick oven or wood-burning oven, as they call it. Mm-hmm. It could be gas-assisted. But, you know, traditionally in Naples, Italy, everything was done with wood. But nowadays, with all the carcinogens in the wood, they don't tend to stay away from the,
sure,
the wood. And everything is being gas-assisted now.
So, Bruno, you once told me that you have to be, and I'm probably getting this not quite right, licensed or something to do this kind of pizza?
Well, not licensed, but you have to take some schooling, and you have to learn from the old masters how to make these types of pizzas, because they take a lot of patience, a lot of love, and a lot of know-how to be able to make a Neapolitan pizza.
And Shane, how is a Neapolitan pizza different than? So we've got New York style pizza that's very thin sliced pizza.
Thin.
Yeah. There's, of course, the opposite
always
of that
pie
you mentioned.
Cut.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good point. So we don't see that typically in Chicago unless someone serves New York style pizza. There's the Chicago deep dish pizza that you mentioned. There's one place that does that stuffed pizza. What? How is Neapolitan pizza different? What is it?
Okay, first of all, it's about fermentation.
About what?
Fermentation.
Are we talking about beer?
Mother yeast. Yes. Like brewer's yeast. We make our own, you know, our starter is from, dates back from Naples, from like 200 years old. And that was a gift given to us, and we regenerated it when we got back into the States.
So what was given to you that's 200 years old?
A starter.
What's that?
It's a mother yeast. It's where, you know.
So you have, hold on. I want to understand
this. You can see how much science actually goes into the pizza.
Yeah. So you've got yeast that's older than Bruno?
Oh, hell yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
It's from the 1870s. Our yeast is from the 1870s.
How do you... Well, no one's alive. How does that...
It's fed every day. It just keeps multiplying.
You feed it?
Yeah, we feed it every day with flour and water again.
And it's going to live for another 200 years if we have our way with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have your way with the yeast. So it's a good thing we're on late night.
Exactly.
So over time, that yeast will pick up bacteria from around the area that you're in.
Good bacteria,
right. Yeah. So it'll pick up bacteria in the pizza place. It'll pick it around just in the environment around the location that you're growing.
Why is it so important to use yeast that's so elderly?
Well, it's a flavor, becomes a little more sour, let's say, just a strain. Like, you know how California has they're famous for their sourdough bread, right? It's a different flavor in their mouth.
Yeah.
It's a little sour.
Or now they have sour beers
Beers, yeah. You know, but it's Neapolitan, right. Neapolitan pizza, if you do the dough right, you know, we let ours, you know, ferment in the coolers for a minimum of 48 hours, the yeast goes away. And when people eat it, you know, it's light. It's not heavy. It doesn't sit in your stomach.
That's
You're not
true.
Burping. And, you know, but
you haven't
typically,
heard me.
Typically, Neapolitan pizza is cooked in a wood-fired oven from anywhere from 60 to 90 seconds. So,
what? You know,
yes. So,
how does it cook so fast?
Because the oven's around 800 degrees.
Oh, that's how.
Yeah. So, you have to be a pretty good pizzaiolo, and it's really an art over there. It's not something you can teach somebody right away. So, there's a lot of steps. Like Shane says, there's a science to it, and you know, you got to get that dough around. The dough is the foundation of the product. If you screw that up, you're done. So, the oven's got to be at the right temperature, and you know, and the ingredients.
Hydration of the dough, too.
Could you ever walk into, say, I'm not knocking Wrigley Field here, but could you ever walk into Wrigley Field and have the unnamed brand, it doesn't matter, and have that generic, if you will, pizza, or the frozen pizza that's so worse, the frozen pizza that's sold at Jewel, again, it doesn't matter what brand it is, but it must taste like cardboard to you.
Yeah, that's why we're around. That's why we're delivering our pizzas or dine in and we carry out, but it's the way pizza was was meant to be eaten. You know, it's right out of the oven. You know, it's
your families are really
from Italy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Not from a freezer, Steve. It was made to be made. It was supposed to be made fresh. So
yeah,
and that's how we want to keep it.
Absolutely. So I happen to know. So this isn't Steve Dale saying. Steve Dale does say the pizza is really good, but this isn't Steve Dale saying it. It's experts saying it. So you were at several times. You've been to Las Vegas,
yes,
where they have a pizza judging contest of some kind, a convention for pizza.
It's called the it's a championship for pizza. We go to Parma once a year. We're three of us in Parma, Italy. We're on the United States pizza team. It's Olympic team for pizza, let's say. And yeah, we are. And we go.
I want to be on that team.
I'm going to Spain in 2 weeks in Granada to compete with another three guys. We were invited.
So I want to know how that works. Hold on. So you're there. We'll take Parma. There you are in Parma.
Yeah.
So I think Olympics.
Yes.
So where you see all the competitors from different countries lined up. Is that the same kind of thing?
Yeah, there's different events, like there's the largest dough stretch, there's the fastest, the fastest guy making pizzas,
Shane just said, you should see these guys spinning dough, so Shane, is it like I Love Lucy when she spun the dough up in the air.
Yeah,
and
it's going through your legs, yeah, around epic. Your waist, you know. So.
Really?
But we're you know, other members are doing that. We are culinary guys, you know.
So it's the best tasting.
Yeah. And
and if you win, do you get like a golden pepperoni or what? What do you get?
Golden salami, you know. Right there.
But you wear around your neck.
We're proud that Paninos.
That's
is,
what I've smelled when I've seen you.
Right,
yes,
right. That's what it is.
We've taken in international. We've taken second place in the world, third place in the world. We've taken 5 times best in America with our. Different styles of pizza, so we're happy. You know, a couple of guys from Chicago. And you know, doing you know, we've won with you know, Chicago style pizzas. We've won with Neapolitan pizza. We've done with the Grandma, which is a New York style pizza. We like to do all the types of pizza in our places, mm-hmm. And that's what we're all about. So
we're climbing the mountain. In 2016, we took third place in Vegas. In 2017,
so the Vegas that I refer to, what's that called?
It's called the Las Vegas Pizza Convention.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing because
it's big.
I've been there, and I was at a conference. I was at a veterinary conference actually, and that's what I do. For those who don't listen to my radio show Sunday morning here, I talk about pets on the radio. I've been doing that for 22 years. And I had a veterinary conference at the same time that you had your, what's it called?
It's the Las Vegas.
Yeah,
the International Pizza Competition.
Yeah, so I was there at the same time, and Bruno was kind enough to say, here's 2 tickets, come on over. So I called a colleague of mine, actually I texted him, and I said...
Now I remember.
Really?
I remember
so I
that.
Said, yeah. Yes. So Dr. Brian Holub, who's a colleague of mine, a brilliant, brilliant man. So I said, in the text, I said, do you want to go out to lunch? Not telling him exactly what this was.
That's cool.
And he said, no. I'm learning about this new system we have to detect kidney disease or something like that. And I said, well, this is a pizza convention. And he wrote back, give me 3 minutes. And I've never eaten so much in my life. It was amazing.
It's great food.
It was great food and the best pizza, really, because you have the competitors there from all over the country. So What makes a really good pizza? And again, it's not only me. It's Steve Dolinsky in his most recent book has written about you guys in terms that I don't quite understand. So I have some translations in front of me that was sent to me about how he is now describing pizza. And you're all over his book, apparently. We'll talk about that when we come back on WGN. It's 11:46, 7:20 a.m.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's all right. We're all here. We're talking
pizza. And I was late coming back because I had my mouth filled with the pizza that we're talking about. We're talking about Paninos. Paninos has several different locations. Bruno, where are they?
3702 North Broadway and Waveland, 1968 Dempster Street in Evanston, and 28 South Fairview in Park Ridge.
Can you eat in all the locations?
Absolutely.
And you can, obviously, because it's a pizza place, you can carry out.
Carry out
Shane,
delivery.
It's more than a pizza place. And you have people coming in who say, I want something else beside pizza. You have a lot of things beside pizza.
We get that all the time. And it's, you know, we're mostly known for the pizza, but we have everything we make there is good. We have ribs. We do burgers. We do pasta. It's all made from scratch. All the sausage that goes on the pizzas and in the pastas, we make in-house. It takes the guys 2 days to put it together.
Yeah.
Mix the meats, mix the spices. Our Chicago location, we do a lot of heavy volume carryout. It's more Italian street food. We sell garlic knots. We do thin crust.
You sell what?
Garlic knots.
I don't know what that is.
You've never had those yet?
I've not had a garlic knot. Is that something that's legal?
It barely.
Only in Chicago.
Yeah. Or only in this city. So yeah, it's made with that artisan dough from the 200-year-old yeast. And then
I still don't understand the 200-year-old yeast. So do you have
it's
like
throwing you off a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it is. So how do you know? Do you know like is it your great-great-grandmother? I mean, how do you know that it's 200? And who gave it to you?
Well, it's
in the first place.
It's got to accompany the gold salami. So,
but I love the idea that you're using that too. So others that do Neapolitan pizza, What is the difference between what they do generically, just in general, and what you do? What makes you special to get all those awards that you do get?
Well, when we go to competition, depending where we're competing, you know, we try to figure out, hey, you know, where the judges from? Italian, we want to stay like on the Italian side. We can't go there like my, you know, our first mistake. We go there and we start throwing sausage, mushrooms, you know, a bunch of Chicago toppings on it. But when you're in Italy, it's
simplicity.
Ingredients, yeah, it's simplicity. You know, they want to taste the dough. They want to taste the sauce. They want to, if you said there's, you know, salami on there and porcini mushrooms, they really want to taste it.
So they really wouldn't have pineapple on it.
No, you won't see
pineapple's not going to work in Italy.
It's just, we take pride in the, you know, the base, the dough. I mean, the dough's got to be spot on. I mean, it's got to be, like I said, the fermentation's got to be right. We do use a mother yeast. It was a gift for me when I went to Naples. I was studying, watching these guys, these pizzas coming out, and what's so special? I mean, why is this so good, you know? And kept bothering the guy. I would go there every night, and he finally says, "You're in the restaurant business." I go, "How did you know that?" He goes, "I can tell. You see, you have passion. I see all when the food's coming out. You're like standing there. You're taking pictures." So we started talking, and you know, before I left, this person from Naples gave me a dried out piece of dough, which is a, you know, it's called the mother. It's how you make your starter, and brought it back, and I got a cooler, a styrofoam cooler, and I did what he told me. I put a thermometer in there, a light bulb, a dimmer switch, and I kept this, and I feed it every day. I kept it around 90, 95 degrees, like an incubator, and I just, till one day, it was like a volcano, just like erupted, and I knew I got it.
It erupted, you knew you got it.
Yeah, I know I got it. It came out of the mason jar. Yeah, it came out of the mason jar, and you know, I screamed. I told my wife, "Hey, it's alive! It's alive!" You know, it's like the Frankenstein.
Well, apparently it
and,
is.
And that's what we win with. And you know, we're you know, we make everything fresh ingredients. You know, and we have to plan it where you got to, you know, think of yourself as a judge. What are you looking for? And there's a lot of, you know, you have to spend a lot of practice.
So
and,
Steve Dolinsky says in his books that in his book that's out now, that you were selected Panino's, that's you, for its margarita artisan pizza, which features light, airy, thin Neapolitan-style crust made with a recipe that's been handed down through the generations that date back to the 19th century in Naples. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Were you surprised that Dolinsky included you in so many places in his book?
Well, he's a smart man, and he's been around. He knows pizza, and when he tasted our pizza, he knew we had something special, so he wanted to talk about it, and I'm glad that he did, because we're getting a lot of recognition for it. So,
hey, well, thanks, Steve.
And you get recognition from all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
They all know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you really do.
Well,
so
when
if
we travel, you know, we get to meet people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we... Like he was saying, you know, when you go to Italy, you got to compete with a certain style of pizza. When we compete in the United States, the pizza could change drastically. Like, we were just in Columbus, Ohio, and we took first place in
Pizza Pizzazz.
In the Pizza Pizzazz. Won $5,000 and bragging rights out of 39 competitors. But right. You know what was on that pizza? Pepperoni, bacon, sausage, barbecue sauce. You know, just
stacked.
Yeah, we called it the hog heaven. And it won because that's what they are used to on that side, you know, that side of the country. So
interesting. Yeah. So if you could describe, last question, I'll start with Shane. If you could describe the pizza we're talking about, the artisan pizza specifically, the Neapolitan pizza, one and the same, in one word, for those who haven't tried it, and a lot of people haven't, what would that word be?
Heaven. It really does. Like, when you eat it, it changes your opinion on the other pizza, like Gino was saying.
One word! You're cheating! What's your word?
That's you, Lenny.
Oh, man. Skip me. I got to think about it.
Okay.
Okay.
One word now.
One word is magnifico.
Magnifico. Bruno!
Wow.
Wow! Okay, guys. Thanks. I say wow to all of you. Thank you so much, and check out Panino's They really are as good as they say, or the judges say they are. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
That's a Nightside song if I ever heard one. And this is WGN Nightside. Nighttime, goody night. I don't know. I'm Steve Dale, and I'm thrilled to be here. And I am thrilled to talk to this next guest because he is a legendary, I think that's safe to say, Chicago actor, Chuck Stransky. Thank you very much for joining us. Chuck? Good morning, Chuck. Yeah, Chuck. Whoa, Chuck.
Chuck's not there. I bet you he is.
I don't know what happened to Chuck.
I think he's there. It's behind one of those 10 million buttons that you have on your screen.
I don't think so. I've got all this up here. Right?
Everything's going right?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, my goodness. I think so. So Chuck Stransky goes back to the days that David Mamet. Remember, I don't know. Did you ever see any of the Mamet plays?
I never saw the plays. I saw the video, the film version of a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't know how that compare. I know how movies compare to theater. I've been to enough of both to know that it's more intense when you see it on a stage. If everyone's clicking in the theater, it's more intense. When you're watching a movie, especially if you're watching it at home, you can put it on pause. It doesn't have the same kind of effect. You can go back and look at stuff. If you're in the movie theater with a bunch of other people, not necessarily with people who might care for that type of movie, for a Mamet movie.
And back in its day, those movies were considered the language in them.
Yeah.
Kind of shocking. So as an actor, Chuck Stransky, who is back on the phone now, we've got you. You cannot move. How are you?
I'm good.
So we're talking. We're doing good. So we're talking about David Mamet. Back in the day, not thinking back in 2018 perspective, but back then, what was that? The 1980s, maybe.
Yeah, you're looking at 1984, 85.
Yeah, was when you saw those lines that you were going to read that we cannot say and please do not on the radio. Some colorful language, may we say? Were you then thinking, I can't say that on a stage? Or were you thinking, this is real?
Well, yeah, you know, a little bit of both. I went, this is real, and can we really say this on the stage? And we did. And it won, you know, Glengarry won the Pulitzer Prize in 84.
Glengarry Glenn Ross is what you're talking about. And what were some of the shows that you were in, the David Mamet shows?
Well, I did that for like 2 years. I've also done a production of American Buffalo, which is an earlier piece he wrote a couple of years before, which is a wonderful play also. And I did several of his movies that he wrote and directed, three of his movies.
Which ones?
Things Change, The Spanish Prisoner.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
I don't know.
One day it'll come to me.
You're in it. That's okay. It's late or early, depending on your...
Exactly. It's late. I just did a show.
Yep. And I know after doing a show and being on stage for a couple of hours, you know, the burnout factor is high. I totally understand that. So you were doing these David... Did you have any idea that you were making theatrical history? Because he's really changed. Here's one person. You know what's... So I don't know that you've done this or not, Chuck, but sometimes I wander around YouTube and I come up, and then YouTube will recommend, depending on what you've seen before, they'll recommend other videos, right? And I saw an old Cup show, and the guest on the show, only Irv Kupcinet could do this. I'm trying to think of the actress's name, but the guests, there were only three guests, or four. Otto Preminger, the old-time director who did a lot of movies, violent movies, but he maintained, I didn't do any violence. So Otto Preminger, Lucille Ball, and David Mamet.
My goodness.
And they were all...
What a panel.
Yeah, and they were all smoking like chimneys. But it was a very young David Mamet. And to see that very young David Mamet and what in... probably 5 or 7 years after that, he developed into was quite incredible. It's worth watching. If you go to YouTube and simply type in Cup Show or type in David Mamet, you'd probably find it.
Herb Cups and David Mamet, I'm sure it'll come up.
Yeah. What was he like personally?
Well, Dave's a very bright guy. I mean, he was always, like, you could say the smartest guy in the room. He's quite a poker player. I don't know if he still plays. I know he was known, notorious poker player. Just very strong opinions. Still, I guess, to this day. I haven't seen him in a while now.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gotten together in a while now. But, he was iconic. An iconoclast also, I would say.
Yeah. So your resume includes all these shows that you just rattled off. So at this point in your career, what do you think about that? Do you think that I did all that, or you're so busy that you don't pay attention?
My focus is more on, like, is there anything going to be next? I hope this isn't the end. What's coming up? We have anything coming up? What can we get coming up?
Well, why did you stay? I mean, you chose to stay in Chicago. That's a great thing.
Yeah, I came back to Chicago in 2010. Well, I'm a theater rat. I love the theater. And, you know, New York is great. And I was working in New York, and I was doing a lot of regional theater. And I began to doing more and more regional theater, out-of-town theater, and working in a lot of little theaters, doing great plays in great companies and great theaters and communities. But I was, like, a little tired of leaving home all the time. And I said, now, where can I go and do little theater, great theater, and come home and sleep in my own bed? I don't have to start a new kitchen every, 3 months or something. And I was like, Chicago, of course. You know, there's like 200 valid theaters in this city.
Is that so? The theater scene, is it vibrant in Chicago now? Is it slowed down? It doesn't, from my perspective, seem to be. I mean, there's the Broadway type shows that come here. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the regional. I'm talking about the local scene. Is it as creative and vibrant as it was, say, back in your day?
I think so. I think so. It's larger. There's more diversity now. Everything from musicals to African-American, Asian viewpoints, Latino viewpoints. I mean, you've got some wonderful theater companies out there, Congo Square, Teatro Vista, besides the Goodman and the Northlight and the Court and, Timeline Theater, where I'm at right now. They've been in business over 20 years, 23 years, I think, now, it's not just a new company springing up. They've been here a while. They're taking in root. They're creating, very good, informative, provocative theater. And it's the writing is great, the directing, the design, the acting. It's all around. One of the things that makes a great theater movement is having great writers and having great designers besides the actors. We all go to see the actors, but if you don't have these other things around them, it's not going to be there very long.
You don't do improv when you're doing a play. So we're going to hear about the play that you're doing right now. When we come back, that's the tease that we do here. We're talking to Chuck.
Teases.
Yeah, he loves teases, he says. Chuck Stransky, Chicago actor, is right here. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to WGN's own Doma T. Pongo. So don't move. And this is WGN Nightside. I am Steve Dale, 20 minutes after 12 o'clock. Matt Bubala, I presume, comes in after 1 o'clock. Typically, he's here then, right? Is he going to be here at that? We don't know. We're not sure about that. You don't know? He's not sure. Nobody knows about Matt Bubala. Nobody has been sure about Matt Bubala for many, many years. I'm sure of this. Chuck Stransky is on the phone with us, Chicago actor, legendary. Does that bother you when the guy says legendary Chicago actor, Chuck?
No, I've been a legend in my own mind for quite a few years.
Well, tell me about the show that you're in right now.
Well, this is a brilliant play called Shayna Madel by Barbara Liebault. And Shayna Madel means a pretty girl. And it's Yiddish. It takes place in 1946 in New York City. It's all in English. Don't let the title fool you. Mm-hmm. It's a very beautifully written play. It's moving. It's about a family trying to reunite after going. Members of them have gone through the Holocaust, and some had gotten out before the Holocaust, and some were left behind. And it's that trying to find one another again, and then relating to one another.
Is it it's not a comedy, clearly, or maybe there are some comic moments.
Well, yes, there are. Of course, there are. But bring your Kleenex. There are comic moments. It's very lyrical. The ensemble is brilliant. This is one of the best groups I've worked with in quite a long time, as far as the people on stage and the design, the set design, the costumes, everything. It's profound, and it's entertaining, and it's uplifting.
Is there a nice uncle in the show?
No, unfortunately not.
That would be you, though. That's how I would cast you. Who do you play?
Well, thank you. Thank you. I play the father. I play the patriarch. Old world. His name is Mordechai Weiss. And he's an old world kind of patriarch.
Uh-huh. Did you have to learn Yiddish? Is there any Yiddish in the show?
Well, there are. There's Yiddish phrases and terms, yes, because he is from the old... Yeah, he's from the old country. And... and he has two daughters, and one, of course, is the survivor of the Holocaust, and one came over with him before the war, and he wasn't able to get the rest of the family out, so one is Americanized and one is not.
Though that's some of the tension, I suppose, right there, right?
Right, and also some of the humor, consequently.
Yeah, yeah. It's at the Timeline Theater Company, which is where.
615 West Wellington, like at Wellington and Broadway in Lakeview.
Mm-hmm. Right next to the dry cleaner.
Yeah, it's right across the street, actually.
Yes, so you could get your dry cleaning done at the same time that you're seeing a really good show at the Timeline Theater. What is the toughest role? I mean, you've been doing this for how many years? 45, I'm guessing?
Yeah, since I've been a professional actor since 1976.
I can't do the math that fast, but I guess I'm in the ballpark.
I can't
there.
Either.
Yeah, so...
it's been a while, yes.
What's the most challenging role you've ever done?
Well, there's several. This was quite challenging because his English, he speaks English, but his syntax is not English. It's not American. It's Yiddish. So he's speaking broken English, and you think, well, you could just make it up. No, you can't. And so I had it was like learning another language in many respects. And I have performed in French. I performed
really?
In Bulgarian. Yes,
Bulgarian.
I performed in German.
Yeah. Do you speak Bulgarian?
Yeah. No.
So how do you learn that?
You learn it. You just learn it. That's your job.
Wow.
I had a teacher. I had a coach, and I played a Bulgarian Orthodox priest, and with full beard and everything, and and I had to learn Bulgarian. It wasn't entirely in Bulgarian, but he had a page of dialogue in Bulgarian.
Well, listen, man, you are an actor's actor, as they say.
Well, thank you.
You are Timeline Theater Company. The show is called Shayna Madel. Chuck Stransky,
right.
Wednesday
through Sunday till November 4th.
Okay.
And maybe beyond. Who knows?
Well, this will do it, right?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. thank you very much. I appreciate you doing this so late at night or early in the morning, depending on your perspective, but thank you.
Exactly. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. I'll tell you, that's what actors are all about. That's what that guy is all about. I've got now the man I've wanted in studio forever, but I don't know which microphone you're on. I think you're on this one. No, you're not on that one. I've run out of choices here. You're sitting in
just
a chair that I've...
Keep pressing buttons until it happens.
What? Wait, what?
Just keep pressing buttons.
No, but I've run out of buttons.
Me too.
What?
Mike Tui.
Mike Tui says, all right.
Yes, there we go.
You're right.
Yes.
Yeah, you've done this before.
I've been in this place before.
You have. We're talking to Doma T. Pongo of the Woo-hoo! WGN Newsroom, and I've wanted to get you in for, I think you are fascinating. I follow you on Instagram.
Thank you so much.
So I'm stalking you.
I think you are fascinating, first of all.
I don't know.
Man.
I don't know about that, but I'll tell you, you're involved in the community in so many ways, and you're about Thank giving you. Back and about making a difference, and you lead these trips to Africa. We're going to talk about
yes.
what those trips are like and why you do them in the first place. And friends, if you want to participate, you have openings, I understand, because you're going again.
Going again, and we have a total of 20-some-odd seats open. We can make more space if more people come. But yes, we have openings. We go February 28th through March 9th, and it is a life-changing experience. You've been to Africa before.
Yes, I have.
Not Ghana, but several more countries mm-hmm. than I've even been to, and you can attest to it. It's a life-changing experience.
It totally is, and I want to talk about all that and why it's a life-changing experience also. But I want to talk about you a little bit. Where are you
yeah.
from?
From Chicago, from Calumet City, from the south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Went to high school in Calumet City. Went to TF North High School. Shout out to all my Meteors. That was
the Meteors.
The Meteors. That was our mascot. Our mascot was literally a guy with a hat that was the shape of a meteor.
So he was a rising star even was, then.
I like it. I yeah. like yeah. I never so thought of it that
did,
way.
Did you always want to go into broadcasting?
Not at all.
Really?
No, not even close. I was I always performed. I was interested in music. I made music. I was in this poetry club in college, and I've always been a performer.
Where did you go to college?
SIUE, Southern Illinois University.
We were just talking about how much of a party school it is. Is it?
No, Carbondale is the party school.
Oh, where did you go to school?
Edwardsville, which is like the little sister campus.
I never knew that existed.
Yes, Carbondale is about an hour, 30 minutes away from Edwardsville.
So you guys never partied?
No, we didn't. We graduated. That was all.
I'm not believing you at all here.
And actually, it was the best thing I could do, because since the campus was so boring, it was a wide open market to find and create fun things to do. So I used to head this organization called One Mic Poetry. So we'd have poetry night, and I'd host and perform, and we'd create a venue for other people, singers, dancers, everybody.
Do you write poetry?
Perform. I write poetry. I do.
Do you? So I do a podcast here that's not about pets, Steve Dale's Other World.
Yes.
So you could check that out at WGN Plus. And I had a guest on who was a poet, actually. And we talked about poetry and how to write poetry and where that comes from. And the answers are, I think, rather surprising. We're going to hear about that. And we're going to hear about everything we just talked about, including that trip to Africa, right here on WGN. Yes. It is the stuff that matters. It is 12:37 on WGN. Fake me out there, Doma T. Doma T. Pongo is here,
yes.
right here in the studio. Oh, there we go. It's my fault. You know what? There, yeah, we're grooving.
Rocking the night away with Steve Dale on WGN Radio.
When he hits the right buttons. And that's the perfect song for this time of morning, which is 12:37. Doma T, you left us hanging here. You went to school where?
SIUE, Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville.
And there's someone else here at this radio station.
I'll give you one guess. Who do you think it is? The other radio personality here at this station who also went to SIUE.
Initials JW?
No, not John Williams.
Then I give up.
Rick Pearson.
I knew that. Rick Pearson.
Rick Pearson went to SIUE.
That's not political enough.
Exactly.
There was nothing happening there.
At all, especially when he was going. No.
Yeah, so then he probably said, this is too boring. I really need to change my life. I need to get into politics.
I need to get something
politics.
Exciting
yeah.
like politics,
and
said no one ever.
Yeah, you're not kidding. So you are here. So tell us, here's where we were in your story.
Yes, yes.
This dramatic story. How did you land in radio?
So I studied economics. I started off performing. I had this open mic poetry organization that I did in undergrad. So I'd always been in the world of performance art. I went to, after graduating, Minnesota and worked at Target headquarters as a business analyst. So did that for a year. Hated it. It sucked. I left. without a plan, didn't know what I'd do. Went to my pastor and my church. I said, hey, figuring things out, just thinking through what I want to do next.
And he your said, pastor said, go into radio?
Isn't that weird? But he actually did.
What?
So I was the multimedia director at my church, Faith Victory Ministries International. And so because I'd worked with music for so long, I knew how to edit audio. So he'd do the sermons, I'd edit them and put a little intro on them. You're listening to so-and-so pastor. And I would do those things. And I didn't realize that that was broadcasting. So to make a long story short, I ended up enrolling in a broadcasting vocational school, and the rest is radio history.
And you end up at WGN Radio.
At WGN.
I know, that's amazing.
This is a dream come true. Yeah. Literally walking past people I've listened to growing up. Like, I've listened to Ro, I've listened to Steve, I listened to, like, my dad. I didn't know all those years of having to listen to talk radio.
Have you told Ro that, by the way?
I have told it. He always thinks, he's being humble, he always thinks I'm pulling his leg. Like, he thinks, he's like, yeah, you know, you really, or either that or it makes him feel old.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, yeah, but my yeah, I grew up listening to a lot of you guys.
That's very cool.
It's amazing.
That's very cool. So you lead these trips to Africa. And
yes.
And what started my interest is simply your Instagram account, and I saw all these images from Ghana, Africa.
Yes.
And then I began to realize what you were doing there. So let's start at square one here.
Sure.
Why do you lead these trips to Africa?
So that started at my first radio gig. I was working at WVON. Mm-hmm. It's a Southside radio station. And
I
they
know
had
the station.
This, yes, yeah. And the legendary station.
It is.
And they had this...
Isn't that where Herb Kent began?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's where Herb Kent, the cool gen, the good guys. That's where they begin. Aretha Franklin has been, a Dr. King when he came to Chicago.
Everybody
stopped by WVON.
Yeah, that was the place to go.
Yes, and that's still chugging along. And so that's where I got my start as a news anchor. And they had this travel agency, Africa Travel Advisors, that would take people to different African countries or even places where just the African diaspora lives, maybe Brazil. And you'd go to this area and learn about these cultures. And so we've got this news anchor.
The African what?
Diaspora.
What is that?
So the word diaspora means just people from a nation, but dispersed all over the world. So Africans in America are part of the African diaspora, African Americans. And then you have Africans in Brazil, dark skinned Brazilians. And then you might have, you know, Africans in Jamaica.
Well, anywhere around the world.
Anywhere around the world. And really, you know, cradle of civilization. All of us are African, yeah, if we look back in our DNA far enough.
Yep.
And so and that was the goal of the trip, just to let people know.
But not Greenland.
Not Greenland. No, not
I don't
so
think
Greenland.
Anybody from anywhere. No one lives in Greenland.
I've got a cousin in Norway.
Not Greenland.
Not Greenland, though.
Not Greenland.
Not Greenland. So, you know, Blackland. And so we go to Ghana. I'm from Ghana. Both my parents are from Ghana. And that's why my name is so unusual, Domati. And you guys can follow me on my Instagram. It's Domati as well.
Coolest radio name ever.
Thank you so much. And then they asked me if I would lead this trip. And I was really, really nervous about it. I said, who'd be crazy enough to follow me halfway around the world?
Mm-hmm.
And this was my first trip going to Ghana as an adult.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2016. That was my first trip.
Mm-hmm.
So 2019, when we go next, that would be my fourth. To date, I've taken 60 people back.
What do you take them there for?
So this is what we do. This is the fun part. So we go to Accra. We land in Accra. Everyone gets settled. We get an orientation where they find out what they'll be doing over the next few days. The next day, they're greeted in the morning with dancers, drumming. People come in, wake them up at the hotel room, playing, dancing. You get this whole educational experience. And then the tour guide explains the history of the country. You know, Ghana was the first African country to get its independence from colonial rule from Britain. Kwame Nkrumah inspired Dr. King. Dr. King was actually at the first ceremony where Kwame Nkrumah gave his speech as president.
And I apologize for my ignorance.
Yes.
This person was who?
Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana.
Okay.
And he was the first president of an African nation to be independent from colonial rule.
How long ago was that? Do you know?
This was 1968, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
1968. Don't quote me on that. I got to Google it. But it's somewhere in the late 60s. And so you learn about that history. Then we go to the W.E.B. Du Bois Museum, because later in his life, W.E.B. Du Bois, the great African-American scholar and thinker, went to Africa to start an African encyclopedia. He noticed that every other civilized nation had a written text about their history, and Africa was missing that. So he took himself and all of his PhDs and began working on the history of Africa and all of this. He died doing the work later in his 90s, and people went on to finish it. But you tour his home. where he lived in Ghana, and it's been turned into a museum. And then we go to Cape Coast, and in Cape Coast, we go to the slave dungeons. This is actually, this is one of the more difficult parts of the trip, where you actually see where people were shackled and chained. You learn about it. And a lot of the travelers, before they go, sometimes they get their DNA done and they find out what region they're from. And so this past year, we had a few people who found out they were from Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they walk into this area, they really, they get chills. You know, you kind of feel this, this emotion. You feel this, there's this, release that you feel knowing that there's a door of no return, they call it. Because when you went out to this door, you were going on the slave ship and they were taking you into the transatlantic slave trade. And no one who went through that door ever came back. But because we get to go as tourists, we get to walk through that door and walk back. So there's a moment of silence and then we shout together, never again, basically saying that never should an atrocity like slavery, human trafficking happen ever again. And as we know, it still happens.
Well, I was just going to say that. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's great that they have these types of places. The Holocaust museums, same yes. kind of thing.
Same kind of thing, yeah.
However, it's still happening again, you know? Yes. So the refrain, never forget, is appropriate, yes. I think, and I'm glad they have places like this, and they're very emotional to visit. I've visited in Europe in particular, similar sorts of things, you know, where the Holocaust type, where they had people and did terrible things to these people, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But it's still happening
yes.
all over the world.
It is.
And it's just, you know, so what do you think it is that is this human nature? Is this going to continue to happen no matter how often we say never forget?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer. I think a lot of it goes to human nature. If you look at the nature, the span of humanity, there's always been some form of slavery. The reason why the transatlantic slave trade stands out is because it was more brutal than most. It was predicated on the fact that this species of human was subhuman. You know, it dehumanized people. So it made it easy to do very vile things to them. And I think that's what made it unique. And we still see the lasting effects in some of how, you know, African-American communities look today.
Absolutely.
Without going down the rabbit hole of how to connect those dots. But if you read up on it, folks, you'll see it. And it's true. But I think part of it is human nature. The second part of it is poverty. The reason why we see a lot of these things happen in terrorism all over the world. I'm reading Bob Woodward's book, Fear, right now, and they're talking about how a lot of these terrorist organizations are bankrolled through human trafficking and sex slaves and these sordid things happening in different regions of the world. So there's always going to be a black market. But as long as we snuff it out, as long as we continue to remember what that atrocity feels like, we won't repeat it.
I hope not, but yeah, we are repeating it.
Yeah,
so when you go to Ghana, I want to learn more about what people experience, and I want to hear about what their responses are.
Yeah.
Because in a way, they are going, even if they don't do the DNA work,
yeah.
they must know they're going to where their great-grandfather was, or at least, you know, Africa's a big place. It's a continent. It's not a country, so right. it may not be the same country, but I'm sure the emotions run high,
yeah.
and I want to talk about that as well. When we come back, WGN Nightside, 10 minutes before 1 o'clock, 12:50 on WGN. That's what old DJs do, time two ways, they call it. Domiti Pongo is sitting right here in the studio. We're talking about these trips to Africa he leads, and he's leading the WGN newsroom. You're back in a couple of hours, huh?
Yeah, I'll be right back at 6 a.m.
with the stories that matter.
Absolutely.
In the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
That's what they call it.
Uh-huh. So we're in Africa now. We're in Ghana, Africa, and you're describing the trip and what people do. And what else do they do? What else happens?
Yeah, so that day, so we go through these, you know, we go through the slave dungeons, and then we kind of shake some of that off, and we have a discussion about what we've experienced. So we kind of break down
it's
and download
kind of
what
emotional.
It is. Very emotional, and it's interesting to see people from so many different backgrounds connect on a human level about what that experience is like. And then the next day, we go have fun. We go hiking, and we go to this, what's called the Canopy Walk. And there's this long bridge, shaky. It looks very unstable, but it is very stable. I promise no one has ever heard on it.
I'm scared just listening.
Just listening to it.
Is it high up?
Very high. Uh-oh. I wish I had the measurements. It's like, it's thousands of feet in the air.
Uh-oh.
Above the tree. You're looking down upon the trees. But it reportedly can handle tons and tons of weight. But you know, if you're brave enough, you hike all the way up to the top of this canopy walk. And then we walk around the canopy walk. on the shaky bridge that has been there for decades upon decades. They maintain it very well, but it's kind of like a daredevil type of thing to do.
So you haven't lost a tourist yet, have
Never
you?
Lost a tourist.
Okay.
No, yet. Never lost a tourist.
That's good.
Will. And so we do that. We go clubbing later on at night. Then we go to a beach resort in Cape Coast. We live on a beach resort in Cape Coast. Then we'll go back to Accra. Accra is like the poppin' city, the Chicago of Ghana.
What is Ghana like? You know, because again, people say Africa.
Yes.
I've been to different African countries. They're all different than one another. It's just like if you go to, you mentioned you have a relative or know somebody in Norway, was it?
Yeah.
It's different than the United States, obviously, you know?
Right.
So, and it's different than the countries next door, like, or nearby, like Sweden or whatever.
Yeah.
So, what is it like in Ghana?
Ghanaians are some of the nicest people you can ever meet. And you'll be there and see abject poverty, some of the craziest conditions, but you see a type of hustle and work ethic that can't be matched. So, for instance, when you walk into some of the tourist places, they'll say, "Oh, my friend, how are you? What's your name? And you give them your name and they shake your hand and you hug them. And they say, "Akwaba." Akwaba means welcome. Mm-hmm. And so they tell everyone, welcome home. And, you'll go inside, do your tour, come back out, and they'll have a seashell with your name on it. And say 10 cedis.
Really?
And they'll charge you for the seashell.
Of course.
It's really a donation, though. It's different than beggars when, nothing against, you know, people have different situations and people, you know, fall on hard times and they'll just beg and just ask, you know, can you spare some change? They'll find something to sell. Even if they pick up a rock off the ground, write your name on it and sell it to you. They're salesmen, and it's a warmth that comes with that. And so often we overpay for those types of things.
You know, one of the things when you go to countries like this and you see people that are living in conditions that we wouldn't even consider, for the most part, in this country, livable, and this is their everyday life, and they're happy, yes, relatively speaking, because they don't know anything else. I'm not sure happy is quite the right word. They're content with what they have.
Content, and sometimes downright happy.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah. And that's only one side of Ghana. Then you have you've got a lot of wealth in Africa too, you know? So, I've got some cousins and some friends that'll show me some of the ritzier sides and some of the clubs, beautiful, beautiful clubs.
So is Ghana doing okay?
Steve, women too, by the way.
What? Pardon me?
Beautiful women too.
Now, Steve, you have my attention. Rwanda is actually doing fairly well now.
Yes.
Been there, right? They had a very difficult time, you know.
Absolutely.
Some with number of years ago. Yeah. It was a genocide.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I mean, terrible isn't even the word. But they're actually, as a country, not as an African, as a country, they're actually doing pretty well.
It's interesting that you bring that up. One of my travelers who went with me, Linnell Harris, he's also a talk show host on WVON, and he went to Ghana and was so inspired that he's traveling to so many different countries, and he's doing business with the president of Rwanda now. And he's been working with their tourism department, talking about how they can get more people from America to come in and experience some of this growth. But I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I'd love to talk to him, actually.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think I have some ideas for him.
Yes.
But Kigali, the capital city, is cleaner than Chicago. Part of the reason for that, no plastic bags. Mm. They've had no plastic bags there, and you don't see anything on the street. It's almost as clean as Singapore is if you've been there. Where it's pristine in Singapore, uh-huh, because you get a huge fine if you just spit out gum on the street.
Really?
You know, literally, yeah. So it really depends on where you are, but these countries and these cities within these countries in Africa are struggling so much, and there are a whole lot of reasons for that. How's Ghana doing?
That's a complex question.
Yeah.
I have a new president that is focused on figuring out how to every single region where they create, you know, Ghana is rich with raw and natural resources. So he wants to create factories in these different regions where they mine specifically what that area is known for. The problem with Ghana is they'll export raw materials, have them become finished goods elsewhere, and then buy them back from other nations, which makes absolutely no sense. And so he ran on the idea that we're going to create, manufacture our raw goods into finished goods. Has that come to fruition? Not so much. There's a thriving de-economy right now, but there are a lot of budding entrepreneurs. And so a lot of entrepreneurial incubators have been popping up in Ghana. A lot of Google just built a headquarters.
Really?
A location in
Ghana.
That's
quite an entrepreneur.
Yes. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
So to be involved with one of your trips, to actually go on one of your trips, how do you learn more?
Very simple. Go to dometi.net, dometi.net/Ghana. Or you can go to dometi.net, dometi.net, and click menu and click on Ghana. And there's a form, a quick form. It's about to take you 15 seconds. You just put your name, your email, your phone number, and you know, you click send and you'll get an email right back with everything you need to know. Also on their website, you'll see our itinerary. We have an information.
Because we've just touched on it, really.
We just scratched the surface. A lot more we do. We stay for 10 days. And the trip is $3,400.
And when you told me that, so I saw you in the newsroom the other day here, and you said $3,400, and, you know, the airfare alone. Could be $3,400, and this includes airfare.
This includes airfare.
That's amazing. Hotel I don't even know stay. How you get it. Done so cheaply. I mean, that's
so many people.
Yeah, but you're going to Africa, for Christ's sake.
Africa,
and so it is life-changing, and we really haven't articulated how that is so, and it's a hard thing. Could you do that in one sentence?
Yeah, in one sentence, you will be thankful for everything that you've taken for granted here, and understand that joy doesn't rest in what you've been able to gather in terms of material things, but joy is really a state of mind and a state of being. And if it's something, if anything that I've gathered from all my travelers and from myself, from the 60 people I've taken, that was the thing, that these people are smiling and they're joyful. And all of the things, the worries of America, the emails that go unread when we're on vacation, none of that matters when you're on the beach looking at the Atlantic, thinking about, you know, who you are and what it means to just exist and be carefree. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Very well put. Give me that email address again to learn more.
Yes, dometi.net, dometi.net. And just click on Ghana when you click the drop-down menu.
I want to have you on some other time when I'm on.
I would love to
talk about the community work you do as well, because we just ran out of time. And Bubala doesn't want me taking up his time. I'm sure of that.
That Bubala, he doesn't play.
I know. That's wrong. Thank you, Dometi.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.